Welcome to the Dell Golf Podcast.
My name is David Adele, and let's sit down at the workbench and talk about how we can play our best golf. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Adele Podcast. Today, I want to shake things up and introduce to our network, our people, some unique and innovative things. And, you know, I want to help give a voice to people that are doing amazing things in golf. People that I respect. I like their vibe. I like their vision. And, you know, it is a bitch to be a startup. It is hard to start something from scratch. And I take a lot of pride in doing it myself. And I love watching the journey of a lot of people doing it the right way. And, you know, Adele Golf, that's what we are. We want to help those people out there that are doing unique things. We're not run-of-the-mill, and we don't want to hang out with people that are run-of-the-mill. And so today, I want to introduce to you a cat that I met at the PGA show. And I walked by, and I saw this golf bag, and he had a real simple little booth, kind of went along with the name of his company, MNML, Minimal Golf Bags, created by Sam Golden. He's the creative mind behind the bag, and I was walking along, and his booth was real simple, and there was this awesome-looking golf bag. He had two golf bags, a white one and a black one. It was just slick and smooth, and then once I started, you know, diving into what he was doing, I was really, really impressed with all the things he had done, and I'll let him discuss it. But, you know, I was really impressed with it. Nobody probably knows this, but I've made two golf bags myself from scratch, and they are, one of them's kind of a work of art, steamed wood, did all kinds of really neat, you know, things to this golf bag. And if any of you have any interest in seeing it, you know, I'll post it. It's pretty cool. And the golf bag I do use took me about, each of these bags took me probably 2 weeks to hand make, hand stitched, leather, punched, all this stuff. So I know what goes into, you know, trying to make a golf bag. And then there's the problem of, you know, making this golf bag and then having it manufactured the way you want it and getting everything right. And I tell you what, I know that doing that through making golf clubs, I know what Sam has had to deal with. So Sam, welcome to my podcast. Sam is not just a golf bag maker. Sam, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I started in golf kind of in high school, got pretty serious about it, and then got good enough to get a college scholarship and played in college, but wasn't by any means. I wasn't the star of my team. I was like that guy that they were hoping would post a score so that we'd have a chance. And so right out of college, I kind of fell in love with coaching and did that for a few years. And as my game developed, decided that I wanted to then compete a little bit. So I started playing some section events in the St. Louis area where I'm from, and then eventually moved out to LA to start playing on the Golden State Tour, and did that for a few years, did a bunch of Monday qualifying. And kind of all along the way was refining and learning more about coaching, refining my coaching method, so to speak, and learning more about coaching and, you know, just taking lessons from all the greats. Dana Dahlquist down the street from me. And I learned from Jim Hardy and Jim Flick and all those guys. And so kind of parallel to my playing career, I was learning to be a better coach, and then developed my online stuff. In around 2009, started making YouTube videos. 2014, launched my online instruction platform. And along the way, wrote a few books about golf instruction. And actually helped, was employee number one at the golf app 18 Birdies, if you're familiar with that. Spent about a year on that project. And then I did kind of 2 years in like a way, almost like a really long extended vacation. I moved to Puerto Rico for a couple of years and just focused on my online instruction platform and learned to surf and hung out there. And then after Hurricane Maria in 2017, I decided to A, relocate from Puerto Rico, but also just get some passion in my life again, get a project that I could kind of fall in love with and work on. And that became Minimal Golf. So that started developing late in 2018. And yeah, now it's full bore what I do every day, all day. It's all I think about. It's everything.
So what inspired you to make a golf bag? I mean, you're a golf pro, you're an acclaimed teacher, and now you get this wild hair to make something. Is that like your first attempt at making something, or are you an artist? You know, for me, I didn't know I had that skill. I did. I had the kind of the same journey as you. I went to South America, taught golf, you know, hung out with all these great teachers, got into teaching, and then I got out of it and I missed golf and I wanted to make something and I decided to make a putter. And then that led to this journey of being a craftsman. Was this your first stab at making something?
Yeah, I think to me, okay, so I saw the direction the game was going. I did a lot of research when I was working for 18 Birdies, and I was with the National Golf Foundation, just like writing this guy an email almost every day being like, how many people use their phones on the course? And then how many people play public courses versus private? So I really got like this great overall understanding of where golf was and the direction it was heading. And I could see that, like a lot of people could, that golf was trending more casual. It was trending shorter rounds. It was trending less stuffy. And I was in a garage with one of my students. I've got my little launch monitor set up and he's hitting balls into a net. And I see this bag that he's ordered online and it's this miniature golf bag. And I was like, yeah, that's basically all you need to go around a course. We don't need all these pockets. We don't need all this junk. And then I started thinking like, yeah. And also like, I'm tired of the golf bag. You know, as I'm starting to think about this golf bag and like, maybe I'll make one. It was like, well, what do I hate about golf bags? And sometimes this comes across wrong and it sounds like I'm throwing big companies under the bus. And I don't mean to do that because they have done a great job and they have their place. But personally, when I buy a bag, I've purchased this bag. It's now my bag. I don't want to carry their brand on my back. I want it to be my bag. I want it to feel good to own this thing. And so you'll see that in the minimal bag, we don't have a ton of branding. We've got just a little bit of our name on it. That's actually getting even smaller in our next run. Because we really want these bags to feel like you own it. It's your bag and you can customize it. And we can talk more about that. But yeah, I was just seeing like there's this big void in the market for a lightweight, easy to carry bag that suits the modern golfer, but also works well enough so that it's not, like we talked about this, it's not a Sunday bag. You know, you've got a stand, you've got the pockets you need, you've got obviously the built-in tech that we've added on. So we wanted it to do everything that you need, but get rid of all the junk you don't need. And at the same time, we want people to feel good about carrying this bag. We want them to love their golf bag.
Yeah, I mean, your bag is so clean and it looks like smooth leather, sexy, you know, doesn't have all these weird zippers. It's got magnetic snaps on it. It's just slick. It looks like something out of the future, but also, you know, great styling and it has really cool features. So explain some of the features that you've put into the bag.
Yeah, I think my inspiration, I've been a minimalist in my life for the past, ever since I started traveling and living out of my car to try to play Monday qualifiers, basically forced minimalism, and just never have gotten into having a ton of stuff since then. Cause at the time I couldn't really, didn't have room for it in my car. So the bag itself is really just a version of modern minimalism in that it's very simplistic looking. It's clean. It's stylish. It's beautiful, but it's not outlandish. And then along with that, minimalism is really cool. Like I always thought minimalism was just like the least amount of something, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. It just means that when you look at it, you see like clean, minimalistic design. But what's really cool about minimalism and architecture and other things and in our bag is that we've hidden in a bunch of really cool features. So when you look at the bag, you're not blown away by like 30 pockets and huge logos and all this stuff. But then when you start diving in, you find that, okay, we've got you can add on our tech kit when you buy the bag, and you can, with that comes a solar power bank. So underneath this, this transparent screen, there's a solar power bank. And then that throughout the bag, we have this portal system that runs wires to charge your phone. So there's a retractable phone charging cable that's connected to this solar power bank. So you can charge your phone when you're on the golf course and in need. And then there's a Bluetooth speaker that you can add on that. Also, there's a wire running through a portal inside the bag that comes out right next to the Bluetooth speaker spot. So, and then obviously the magnetic stuff, which you touched on, instead of having zippers, which for me as a player, I used a bag like to death in like 9 months. And so as a player, when the zipper broke, it was always the pocket that I used the most, obviously. And that pocket was the one I liked the most, you know, it was my everything pocket. And so as soon as the zipper breaks, the pocket's done. And if that pocket, my favorite pocket's done, the bag's done. So I wanted to find a solution for that. And magnets are just an awesome solution for that. I asked our manufacturer why every company doesn't just use magnets. And basically the answer was it just costs more. It just costs, like, for our bag, it's probably $5 more to use magnets than zippers. And I guess if you multiply that by 100,000 bags, which some of these big companies sell, you're talking about $500,000, which is an executive level salary. So yeah, I wasn't really interested in making, you know, every single dollar I could out of this bag. I wanted to make the best golf bag that I could make. And that's why the features, that's why the minimalistic design, that's why the lightweight, that's why the backpack strap doubles as a single strap too. And I know you felt that you can throw it over one shoulder and it feels just like a single strap. And then you can put the other strap on and now it's a backpack strap.
And those are functions that anybody that's done any packing of a bag, you know, knows what a good golf bag feels like. It's got to hitch in the back correctly. It's got to feel good on your shoulders. It's got to be easy to grab one strap, two straps. And it's got to be flexible. And then the bag's got to carry well and be balanced. And, I loved making the bags that I did. And to chime in with what you said, that a golf bag is an extension kind of your own personality too. You know, if you walked outside and everybody wore a pair of Levi's and a Nike red shirt and the same shoes and walked around everywhere, you'd go, geez, you know, this is kind of lame. And everybody's walking around as a billboard for these OEMs. And I guess that's fine. But, you know, I want my bag to be kind of an extension of my personality. And you see bag companies like Jones and, you know, Lynx and King. And, you know, there's a lot of smaller bag companies out there. You got Vessel, you know, which is kind of taking storm because everybody's like, I'd rather pay up and not carry homie's bag. And I want my bag to look unique. And I want someone to say, wow, what is that? What kind of bag is that? And, you know, I think that's what we're all striving for is to show the differences in the things that we pay attention to.
Yeah. That part, that unique part to us, like I see exactly what you're saying. I want this bag to be unique and I want it to be something that resonates with me as a brand when I carry it. And at the same time, as you mentioned early on, we only have two colors and I don't have another colorway planned. I mean, at some point we probably will, but the really cool thing about this two color system is that it's forced us to be really creative about how to make the bag unique to each individual person.
Yeah. So tell us about that. You're doing some really cool, I think our bag was the first bag that you kind of came across where someone asked you to logo it and you were like, huh, you know, since the bag's already made, how do we do this without destroying the bag?
That's exactly right. You know, I asked the factory while we were in development, I was like, hey, we have to figure out a way. At some point, we're going to need to figure out a way to logo these things. And they were just like, not possible. You can't get an embroidery machine in there. You don't have zippers, so you can't zip off a panel like a traditional bag. And that really bummed me out because, again, I want it to be unique to each user. And one day I was just sitting here and I was like, you know what? I bet we could just paint, like actually paint on the bags. And so when you guys asked if we could customize them, I reached out to the guy, he's become a great friend now, but reached out to this artist who did my sign at the studio. And I was like, hey, Hitoshi, could you hand paint a logo on this material? And he's like, well, let me try it out. So he took the material home and he painted a couple things. And one of them was your logo, the Adele logo. And it came back. And as soon as he handed it to me, I was like, oh my God, this is it. It looks... The hand-painted aspect of it, first of all, it's a perfect replica of your logo, right? Like, it looks just as good as your logo. But then you look close and you see that this is paint. This is like someone handcrafted this. And to me, I feel like we just got so lucky that we were forced to find a solution to that problem and came up with something that's so unique that now anybody can put anything they want on the bag. It's not like it has to fit in an embroidery machine. You can only put it on this pocket. You can write your kid's birthday on it. You can put a tattoo on it. You can put your club logo if you want on it too. You put your initials, your nickname, and that's really awesome stuff. And we're doing it for a price that's pretty achievable. It's basically you can put your logo on it and your initials for $100. And that's Hitoshi sitting down and hand painting your country club logo and your initials on a bag. That I think is a really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's, when Neil Oster, you know, my right-hand man in creative mindset with me, told me that you were going to paint the logo on the bag, I was kind of like, geez, I'm not, you know, okay. And then when I saw it, I was like, damn, that looks great. You know, and I kind of liken it to each bag almost being like, you know, back in the old days on the bomber squads, you know, where they would paint their own, you know, insignia on their plane. And, you know, I look at it this way and it's like, you know, it's almost like folk art to a degree, which is really cool. I mean, it's really unique in this world where everything has to be make it for me now, Amazon Prime, get it to me the next day. This is unique. This is hand craftsmanship. And there's, you know, there's a story behind each logo that goes on a bag. So it's not minimal when it comes to your logoing, right?
So that's right. It's minimal. It looks beautiful and sleek and simplistic, but then when you start uncovering the layers, there's a lot behind it.
Yeah, no, and that's awesome. That's why I have you on. Is, you know, I love what you're doing. I love your support of single length. So tell me a little bit now, moving on, unless you have something else you want to talk about the bag. And
no, I'd love to dive into. So I met you in St. Louis back when I was there just starting to compete in 2005. I think you had kind of done a tour to introduce people to your putter fitting system, but you were in St. Louis at this place. Midwest Golf Labs.
Yep. You remember that's that? It. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so Midwest Golf Labs, John Kelly, great guy.
Yep,
he sends out an email. He says, I'm going to have David Adell here. And I was like, done. So I go, I want to learn. You know, I just want to see, like, what is this? And I spent a couple hours there with you guys, and I was, like, just blown away. I was like, I have to have this putter now. And I didn't have the money to buy it at the time, but I was like, I can't play golf with anything else. I literally left that putter fitting and putted with my sand wedge for the next 2 weeks while I waited for my putter to come. Because I was like, I don't aim my putter well. Why would I use it? Yeah. I'll just use my sand wedge. And finally the putter came in, and I used that putter for like 7 years. No. I used it for about 5 or 6 more years. And then I got fitted again by Jason Goldsmith. And he fitted me, without knowing what putter I had, he fitted me to the exact same head shape, loft, lie angle, everything. And then he was like, I think you're good, bud. He's like, I don't think we need to change. And so for me, it was like, wow, I've been using this putter for 6 years on the belief that it was right for me. And it was just confirmed again through the same scientific process.
Right.
And I was like, wow, okay, so these fittings are real. Then my buddy Brent got into the fitting like a couple years later, and I was like, Brent, let's do one from scratch again. He was working in the same golf studio as me. I was like, let's do a whole nother fitting from scratch. And it came out the exact same.
See, that happened.
And I was
that happened with Laird Small, good friend of mine at Pebble Beach. And so I fit Laird, and he's like, I don't really like the look of this putter. He goes, but I aim it good. And everything I like the look of, I can't aim. So I go, okay. So I kept this information. I went back, came back like 2 weeks late, 3 weeks later, went down to Pebble, fit Laird. He was the director of instruction at Pebble Beach, and he fits in the same exact thing. And he's like, okay, this is real. So I want to set you up in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks. Can you come back down and show it to the buying group? And I got to get everybody to sign off. So I do another fitting on him, and he fits into the same exact thing, trying not to. And he said, this is the realest thing I've ever seen. And so I appreciate that. I'm glad that worked out for you. So tell me about your journey into single length. You kind of steampunked your own stuff, and
yeah.
What got you into the single length?
I think I'm always searching. Well, I don't think. I know I'm always searching for the best answer, and oftentimes the best answer is the simplest, right?
Yep.
This is cliche for a reason. So for me, in my golf instruction and everything that I've done, I've tried to just really boil it down to what is the absolute most important thing that creates this thing that I want or this thing that I intend. And so I was hitting balls on a simulator in 2009. I was probably one of the first good players to take simulators seriously. And I knew that there were a lot of flaws with the simulator I was on. However, the launch angle was dead on accurate. So what I found was that if I changed the launch angle of my 7-iron by 2 degrees, I could increase the distance by like 13 or 14 yards. And I'm standing there hitting balls. And I'm like, well, okay, so I'm hitting my 7-iron. It's going 21 degrees. It's carrying 160. Wow. At 19 degrees, it carries 172. And at 17 degrees, it carries 185. And I was like, shit, I guess I should just hit it at 17 degrees because it carries 185. And so then I was like, is that okay? I'm basically de-lofting a 7-iron. So then I started trying to find as much as I could. I was researching launch angles from the best players in the world. And at that time, there wasn't that much information. This was 2009 or 10.
Yeah, way before TrackMan and all the data that was coming off of that.
Yeah, so it was tough, but I saw there was one tournament where I got some numbers from Tiger and another tournament where I got some numbers from Phil, and they both launched their 9-irons at 19 degrees. And I was like, okay, 19 degrees, 9-iron. What I found out was that roughly half of the launch angle was what they were launching, half of what the club was built with. So 7-iron was launching at 17, 34 degrees 7-iron was launching at 17 degrees.
Right.
And yeah, so, and on down the road. So I learned this and I was like, okay, these are the optimal launch angles. Why don't I just bend my clubs? Instead of having different length clubs, I could just bend the lofts. I could play 2 7-irons and just bend my 7-iron stronger and it'll launch lower and it'll go farther. And so at the time, I didn't have any way to make that work because the swing weight, the heads get lighter through the set and to match the shaft lengths or whatever, all that stuff. And so what I had to do was I ended up just taking, I had 2 5-irons, I bent one 5-iron strong to 4-iron basically. And then I had, but also my 5-irons were 1/4-inch short. And then my 6 and 7-iron were 1/8-inch differential. My 8-iron, 9-iron were 1/8-inch differential. And then my sand wedge, lob wedge through 9-iron were all the same length. So I was able to get the swing weights right by just having small differentials and making having 2 5-irons, but one's lofted was a 4-iron. And I basically built a very compressed, like if you think, you know, like the normal set stretches out over 5 inches or something, mine was like 2.5 or something.
Right.
Or less. And so for me, I'm sitting hitting balls on the simulator and I'm like, dude, if I can make basically the same swing every time and just change the launch angle of the ball and it goes 13 yards farther, why on earth would I do anything different? Why would I add another variable? There is no reason for this other variable. So I came into it that way. And then I stopped playing full time in 2015 and just kind of like left it alone. Saw single length coming, got a ton of emails from all my followers on Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff. They're like, Sam, single length makes a lot of sense with what you're coaching. And I was like, yeah, it does. It's right on. It's almost what I played with. And so a bunch of my students, you know, were like trying out the single length sets out there. And eventually, finally, I was like, you know what? I'm not competing anymore, but I hate my clubs right now. I left my set, my competitive set in Puerto Rico, just to have a set down there. And I came back and got this OEM set that I thought was going to be custom fitted, but it was basically off the rack. And I hated him. I hated him for 2 years. And finally, I talked to Neil and I was like, Neil, could you please make me a set of clubs? And he's like, he literally just asked me what I liked and what I played. And that was enough for him to send me he made the set. I didn't even ask him what was in it. He sent me the set. First shot, I flushed off the middle and was like, this is money. So yeah, I literally just I was like, Neil, here's what I like. Here's what I played when I was competing. Can you make me a set with this information? He's like, yeah, I got you.
And here's the problem, you know, with what you were doing, you know, you did what you could do because that's what you had, right? But, you know, as you de-loft something, you're taking bounce off of it. And, you know, like you're back to that equation of what Phil Mickelson, let's say he hits his 7-iron at a 17 degree launch angle, which is half of, you know, it's probably at 34 or somewhere around there if he's holding to traditional lofts. So that means he's taken 17 degrees of bounce off of the golf club. You know, when I built Bryson's clubs, his stuff was all around 19 degrees of bounce with a really blunt leading edge, really cambered front end. So as you were taking modern clubs, and the last thing you want to do on your 5-iron or 6-iron is peel more weight off of it by fixing the grind, because you're already out of weight, right? So, you know, that became inherent to anybody trying to create their own set with modern equipment. So I'm glad, you know, we were able to provide a solution. And even if we didn't get the weight correct, we have the ability with our weight ports to, you know, up it or decrease it. So
yeah, that was amazing. So Neil sent in the box these extra weights and I was like, huh, what are these? And I looked at them and I swung the first one right out of the set. I was like, that was good. That was solid. This is a good build. It fits my swing. And then I was looking at the weights and I was like, huh, I think I would like it better with a light swing weight or with a light head weight. And so I put the 6-gram one in and I swung and I was like, boom, done. Never have to change. This is the last set of clubs I ever need. I'm probably not going to wear them out because let's be honest, I don't practice anymore. Like, I'm done. I'm sold.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you, we would think that by putting a heavier weight in the golf club, it goes higher. But in actuality, it actually flies higher. in almost every case. It changes the frequency of the shaft. It also changes layback. When you add more head weight to it, it tends to go more to the right and tends to go lower. And when you lighten it, you know, and I'm not saying what light is. Light is could be starting out with 14 grams and going to 12. You know, it could be someone in 6 grams going to 2 in the head, right? Right. So it's a depends kind of a statement, but lighter to what a person needs is generally going to be higher and more left, and heavier is going to be lower and more to the right. So tell me about what you think, you know, where do you think single length's going in the future? Do you think it's going the way of the dodo bird, or what do you think?
Yeah. So about the last, since I had the clubs, which is about 2 months, I've played twice. And the first time I was, my brain was doing this weird, my consciousness was doing, my intellect, probably more specifically, was doing this weird thing, looking down at the club and going, this is too much loft for this length. And I got over that after about the third hole. I was playing this par three course, so just irons. I got over that after about the third hole, and I just said, Sam, just trust the yardage and swing the club. And after that, my dispersion went way, like my normal dispersion with my other clubs, I had a ton of variability at the bottom. I could tell the swing weights were off for me. They were kicking way too much because the shafts were heavier than I wanted and flexier than I wanted. But once I just said, okay, just swing the club, just line up and swing the club and trust the loft to do the distance for you. It just, my dispersion just went way down. My ball flight actually, I expected the ball to draw not more, but the same amount as my other clubs. And the draw just kind of went away. And I never fade it with anything really, except for driver and three wood. So I literally was like, you can just stop aiming right now. You can pretty much just aim at the flag, you know, set the club in there, aimed at the flag, and then just make your swing. So to answer your question, I've had that question in the last 2 months now since I've owned them. And for the last, since after that first round, and now that I've played again and I've hit balls on the simulator and seen the results, my answer is there is absolutely nothing that you could say to me at this point that would convince me to play anything other than single length. And I can't imagine why anybody would play anything other than single length. Personally, just from what I know about, and it may be limited, I believe that it's probably limited, but from what I know of physics and geometry, there's absolutely no reason to have a longer shaft if I can get the same job done with the same shaft, you know, the same length club.
Right.
So I think that as younger players, I think the reason there aren't any tour players, exception Bryson, I think the reason there's not so many is because they grew up with variable length shafts. So they're, of course, playing with what got them on tour. But I do believe that we will see as kids get into the 14, 15, 16-year-old range, as long as there's enough coaches out there with open minds to try it, they're going to see how much more consistent it is, and we're going to be single length eventually.
Yeah, I believed it too. You know, I threw a 7-year timeline on it that, you know, we would get to that critical mass, and I'm probably off on that number only because, you know, until another OEM jumps in there and gets behind it. Cobra has done kind of a very minimal job at doing it, trying to kind of skirt in their bed on it. And, you know, it is an off-the-rack product, so it's not going to be fit to you. And I always said it has to be fit to you because, you know, there's so many variables going on. And if you're going to charge a decent amount for a well-built set of golf clubs, it's got to be well-made. And so I knew that was, you know, important. That's why I created the system I did with everything involved with it. Do you see this affecting your teaching in the future? And do you see a niche developing for you in the sense of, you know, talking people about, you know, the advantages of single length? And then, because, you know, really out there, like you said, it comes down to coaches. And if coaches are poo-pooing it, then why would a student do it? You know, and it's only because they don't understand or haven't even done it. And, you know, Mike Shy, when, you know, who's one of my dear friends and Bryson's coach, you know, he never shot him down. He said, well, Bryson, let's work through it. Let's see, you know, he never, ever shot him down on it. And then by God, it was working for him. And so Bryson, you know, at the time, he lost a lot of scholarship opportunities. Stanford passed on him, UCLA, USC, they all passed on him because
really?
He was playing single length and they were kind of like, oh, that's a nut job move. Right. And then,
So,
you know, you know, his coach at SMU basically said, you know, this kid's got it going on and I'm not put off by it. You know, I kind of relish having somebody different and somebody that believes in what they're doing. So, but it comes to the coach, you know, and then how does the coach, you know, there are not that many coaches out there that know how to talk about single length and how to hit your wedges and how to play, you know, that one swing scenario.
Yeah. So I think it's the same thing with every paradigm. Once it's a very comfortable, I can speak for myself probably, I tend to feel comfortable doing things that are accepted by the greatest mass of people. And I, even with my swing philosophy, when I first started posting about it on YouTube, I was a little bit apprehensive because I don't want to look stupid or different or so crazy that I'm some weirdo wacko who's telling everybody to preset their hands in the impact position and not hinge their wrists. You know, like I was literally saying something that every coach I talked to said was not a good way to play golf. And at one point I was like, it's just so much simpler. I'm not going to not teach this and it's helping all of my students. So I'm going to go ahead and tell it to everybody. I think if the coach can get to that place, then they can be a little bit more comfortable being innovative.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it is. It's just being comfortable being innovative. Once you have proof, there's no reason not to, other than it's just uncomfortable. So for myself, at one point I was like, you know what? Screw it. This is working. It's working for me. It's working for all my students. This is a way that people can do it. And I want to share that to help as many people as possible. And if the coach can get to that point before it becomes something everybody's doing, that's kind of what it's going to take. And as my own thing, yeah, I mean, I was doing like position one. I mean, literally position one lob wedge flies 39 yards. Position two lob wedge flies 68. Position one sandwich flies 49. Position two flies 75. I can do this through my set. You know, I can tell you what exact swing goes exact distance because I play consistent. I eliminate all the other variables and I can make these solid chunks through evidence with launch monitors. I can build this system into my game where I never have a doubt about my swing and about the yardage. If I just put in the variables, like it's 159 carry, it's downwind five, it's downhill 5 yards and it's into the wind five. I can plug those numbers in really quickly, like everybody else does. And then I can say with absolute certainty, this is the swing and this is the club that gets it done. And I can do that maybe better than some because I have less variables in my set. I'm not relying just on feel. I'm relying on solid concrete numbers that I've seen after thousands of shots.
Because you're working from one basic swing plane, one basic posture, one basic low point, and you know all the variables, all the energy it takes. And that's the thing I don't think people understand is the amount of energy it takes to play a 10 club system, you know, probably less, you know, because we have our wedges are generally, you know, only half inch or an inch, a quarter inch apart. But, you know, from the pitching wedge through the 3-iron, if you have that, you know, you got all this variability that's where you're putting all your energy is into the act of having variable length golf equipment. And so, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity in instruction. I think there's a huge opportunity in the growth of the game by trying something new and different. I think this would simplify things for beginners, for women and juniors and male beginning players that come into the game and they're like, hey, man, this game's hard. The ground is variable. The grass is variable. There's courses are designed to be treacherous and water and bunkers and wind and, you know, humidity and altitude.
I'm really glad you brought that up. And I know I'm cutting you off, but I'm doing it with a purpose. I teach a lot of beginners.
Yeah.
I love coaching beginners. It's like my favorite thing. I love coaching beginners and really, really serious players. I have so many people who I coach, and the way I coach is I teach everybody how to hit the ball solid first. So you've got to hit the ball solid first. I give you one club, 7-iron. You learn how to hit this ball consistently solid. And then if we need to work on ball flight direction, we solve that second. So if I have a 7-iron, I hand you that 7-iron and we take the whole first lesson working on solid contact. We get that down. Then I hand you a pitching wedge. If you're a beginner, I've seen this for 5 years. The second I hand them a pitching wedge, they miss the ball. They top it, they heel it, they toe it because their brain's trying to go, oh, now we've got this different thing. It's an inch and a half different.
Closer to me. It's steeper. It's all the other things. They're just...
It's heavier. It's shorter. Its shaft is different. Everything's different. And so if I hand them a 7-iron and I say, learn how to hit the ball solid with this, and we learn how to hit the ball solid, then I hand them essentially another 7-iron with pitching wedge loft, they've already learned how to hit the ball solid. Yeah. They're going to hit the ball solid, and then I'm going to say, okay, see, your pitching wedge goes this far when you make solid contact. Your 7-iron goes this far when you make solid contact, period. Yeah. You don't have to learn where to stand and how to adjust to all these factors. So you're right, 100%. for beginners, it's going to make a huge difference on how fast they can pick up the game.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I'm a firm believer. Obviously, spent a lot of money with single length and to try to get it going. And I believe in it wholeheartedly. And Bobby Jones did also, you know, having all his irons the same length. So, well, Sam, hey, it's been phenomenal. Is there anything you want to add to the end of this podcast?
Oh, I do want to ask you. So when I competed, I played 44 inch. My driver was 44 inches and I had this 330cc head, KZG head that I had fitted with a pretty stiff 70 gram shaft that was frequency app, really well built club that I had this guy, Matt Mora, build for me when he was working at KZG at the time.
Yeah.
I love that driver. I broke it. I got a Callaway Alpha and that club I had tweaked to get it really close to perfect. And that's in Puerto Rico. The current driver I have, I don't use, because I mean, I can use it, but I can't count on it because the shaft is too long and the flex is all messed up and the swing weight's messy. I need a club after my 4-iron, which is some sort of hybrid club, possibly a fairway wood, but I don't really care to have one. But something like between my 4-iron and a driver, and I need a driver too. What can we do so that I can have those two problems solved based on what you know?
Hey, I mean, you're talking about, you know, a problem that exists out there and a huge opportunity also. And what saddens me about a lot of these companies understand that single length could become something. And I don't understand why they haven't built into their new driver lines the option to make these heads heavier. Because if you want to play a driver at 210, I mean, at 43, 43 and a half, 43 and a quarter, you need a head that's going to be right around 207 to 210 grams, depending on your shaft weight, right? So, you know, your three woods are up around 207 grams, right? Driver's generally around 200 because it's being played at, you know, potentially at 46 to 45 and a half or 45. So here we are with this concept of single length. It would make all the sense in the world to me. Our three woods are generally about 43 inches, right? So if we built our driver to 43, 43 and a half, we would have almost a single length concept there. And, you know, the old Cobra drivers that had three weight ports in them were one of the few drivers that you can get heavy enough without slathering in on a bunch of lead tape and or changing the MOI of the golf club drastically. Because, you know, if you put... You know, if it's a two-weight port system or something on some of these clubs, most of them are fixed in their channel, so you can't really do a whole lot. If it's a movable weight system and you put two weights in it, you might be putting weight in the back in the MOI area where you don't need it, and then you got weight in the heel, and then you got something. This driver feels terrible. So to me, it's a challenge to the golf industry to start thinking in terms of how could we create a driver three wood, five wood, seven wood scenario, all single length at 43 inches. That would be ideal.
Well, right. And that's what we know. You and I both know. I know as a coach, and I think you know with all of your experience, that after about 44 inches, I don't have a single player who can hit a 45 inch driver better than they can hit a 44 inch driver. And I'm not just talking about sweet spot. I'm talking about everything.
Yeah.
Sweet spot, diversion, dispersion, distance. After 44 inches, it gets pretty wildly out of control. And the fact that we're building clubs, we're not even going to get into how ludicrous it is that we're selling 46 inch drivers on like to the mass markets. But like, we know that it's really important to play a driver that you can hit in the sweet spot. And then if you change the loft, you're changing spin and you're changing carry. So why not just play everything at 43 or 43 and a half or whatever? But like, I guess maybe it's going to take the rest of the world learning that's the truth before a big OEM is going to make a driver that would work. Or why would they even care to make a driver that would work at 40?
Well, I would have tried to get into that business if single length would have launched a lot faster. You know, it's growing. We're seeing tons of interest now and with Bryson winning. And it's definitely catching people's eye, and the logic of it's making a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people that have been on the fence and been thinking about it for a long time are finally starting to execute. And or try, you know, a cheaper offering like the Cobra clubs and then saying, okay, now from here, I need to get a better set because I do believe in this concept and I love it. But the wood part of it is just, it is a conundrum, and it would be nice to, you know, to have something out there that allowed for that to happen, you know, with our 3-wood and driver being the same. And if we can, you know, our 5-wood's going to generally be, because it's going to generally be shorter than a 3-wood, it's probably heavier. We can lengthen it and not have it be, you know, too off whack, you know. So, you know, a 5-wood could be a really good option for somebody that's looking for that, you know, 220-yard club or two, you know, and have it be single length and match the 3-wood and then match the driver. So they're really feeling like everything they're doing is working from one plane with the woods and then one plane with their irons. So that would simplify things greatly. You know, I don't think we're quite there yet. I think everybody's, you know, waiting to jump in the pool. And until we start seeing more success out there with Bryson and the dialogue increasing and companies finally saying, hey, there's an opportunity here. And we've been waiting to see if this is going to go away, and it's not going away. It's not a fad. It's a real deal.
It is the real deal. It can't possibly go the other way. It's just how fast are the coaches going to be open-minded enough to try it? Because once you try it, you see that it's real. And once you know it's real, then you'd be crazy not to use it, right? It's so much simpler.
All right, Sam, in closing, tell us where to find you. Where are you located?
Yeah, you can find Minimal Golf, just the word minimalgolf.com. And you can find us on Instagram, MNML Golf on Instagram. And my coaching platform, samgouldengolf.com.
Can you spell your name?
That's pretty much it. It's Sam, G-O-U-L-D-E-N, samgouldengolf.com.
All right. Perfect. Awesome. It was great having you on my podcast, and I appreciate your love and your knowledge of the game. And, you know, you working hard to create your own product. I'm, you know, proud of you for doing that, and I wish you the best of luck, and we're going to support you all day long.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, David. As I said to you before we started this thing, I'm just really grateful that you're doing what you're doing. I think that's so awesome. It's the way I try to run my business, and anytime. I just think it's really cool that you're doing this in search of or seeking out people who you can help. I think that's an awesome platform.
Yeah, no, it's all about speaking the truth and, you know, involving people that do the same and love what they're doing and have a passion for the game. And I think people listening have that passion for golf and what we're doing. And that's essentially, you know, what I'm trying
that's
to do here
about,
with our podcast is, you know, me throwing spaghetti in the wall and seeing what's sticking and trying to help people out. And I know that's what you try to do. So thanks, Sam, for coming on, and wish you the best of luck, and we'll keep supporting you.
Awesome, man. Well, I'll talk to you soon, David. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Adele Golf Podcast. Make sure you stay tuned for more podcasts coming your way on a regular basis. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're interested in going through a fitting process and finding the best putter for you, head over to adelegolf.com. Go to the Find a Fitter tab, scroll down, and find a fitter in your state nearby. Find a putter that you know is custom fit for your best performance. That's it for today. We'll see you next time